Lecture 18, How Culture Influences Personality.
For many years, most research in psychology was conducted in just a handful of Western countries. The United States, Canada, Great Britain, Australia, Germany, the Netherlands, and a few others. And almost all participants in psychological studies were from that same group of countries. Now, that's not a very diverse sample of people, and it certainly didn't allow much research on how personality might be influenced by culture. Well, those same countries still dominate scientific psychology, but the number of behavioral scientists in other countries has grown exponentially. Not only that, but Western psychologists have taken more seriously the idea that they need to consider cultural differences in the phenomena they study. Many researchers regularly conduct studies in other areas of the world, often in collaboration with researchers from places that have typically been underrepresented in psychological research. So we know much more about the effects of culture on personality than we did not too long ago. Think for a moment. How might you have turned out differently in terms of your personality if you had grown up in a culture that was different in important respects from the one you grew up in? You would certainly not be the person you turned out to be. But in what ways might you have been different? To explore this question, let's start by making it clear what we mean when we talk about culture. Culture has been defined in many ways, but it fundamentally comes down to a set of beliefs that are shared by a large group of people. Although the term culture is usually used to refer to the beliefs in a particular country or ethnic group, it can also be applied to other groups, such as a particular company or area of the country, or even a sports team. We often think about culture in terms of how people act, their traditions, how they dress, what they eat, how they interact with each other, and so on. And culture does involve those things. But cultures are fundamentally based on beliefs. Beliefs about what's important. Beliefs about what's right and wrong. Beliefs about how things should be done and how people ought to behave. So when we say that culture influences personality, we mean that the beliefs that people adopt from their culture influence their tendency to behave in certain ways. As a result, people from different cultures show systematic differences in their thoughts, behaviors, and even emotions. Before talking about how cultural factors influence particular personality characteristics, I want to make a general point about cultural influences on personality. We talked previously about the fact that personality doesn't manifest as much in strong situations that pressure people to act in certain ways as it does in weak situations. Well, cultures differ in the degree to which they generally exert a strong or weak effect on people's behavior. So cultures differ in the degree to which people's behavior reflects their individual personalities. Some cultures put more pressure on people to behave in certain ways, to be a certain kind of person, than other cultures do. And the more that cultural pressures require people to act in culturally prescribed ways, the less people's individuality comes through, and the less variability we see among people. For example, the dominant culture of the United States permits a great deal of individual choice in how people behave. People can choose what they do for a living, who they live with, what they wear, how they spend their free time, whether they practice a religion, and so on. In fact, American culture not only permits a great deal of latitude in behavior, but it values and actively encourages individuality. Be yourself. March to your own drummer. There are still social norms and pressures to conform in certain ways. That's true of every society. But people's personalities are given more freedom to operate when cultural pressures are relatively weak. Contrast that with cultures that limit people's discretion to choose their lifestyle or their occupation or their religion or their spouse or how they spend their free time. In those cultures, which researchers sometimes call tight cultures, how people behave is more heavily scripted by the culture and less influenced by personality. These cultures allow less personal discretion than so-called loose or weak cultures. Tight cultures are more common in homogeneous societies where just about everyone shares the same basic racial and ethnic background, cultural beliefs, religion, and social values. Those societies have many norms and rules about how people should behave, and they punish those who deviate from the rules, even in minor ways. In contrast, heterogeneous societies tend to be looser and more tolerant of individuality because many different cultural belief systems are present. People are permitted to make their own choices of what to believe and how to live. Clearly, growing up in a tight culture creates a different orientation to rules and authority and one's place in the society than growing up in a loose culture. And when rules are strict, people have fewer opportunities for autonomy, and their behavior is less likely to express their individual personalities. Psychologists have been interested in cultural differences in personality for many years. But comparing the personalities of people from different cultures presents a number of challenges. Most notably, when the people in the cultures being studied speak different languages, it's difficult to be certain that the translations of the measures being used are equivalent. Typically, researchers translate a measure from one language to another and then back-translate the translation back to the original language to be sure that the words mean the same thing in both directions. This often requires several efforts back and forth before they get it right. But even then, exactly the same word or phrase may have different connotations in different cultures, which may affect how people answer the question. And sometimes questions on a personality measure contain concepts or situations that don't even make sense in another culture. An item such as, "I like to start new fads and fashions," would make absolutely no sense in most tight cultures. The other big challenge for researchers has been identifying the characteristics of cultures that affect personality. Cultures differ in many, many ways, some quite important and some very trivial. And it's been a challenge to identify and measure the aspects of culture that might have psychological consequences. To do this, researchers have tried to identify the basic dimensions on which cultures differ from each other. Just as we can describe people's personal characteristics in terms of basic personality dimensions, we can describe the characteristics of cultures along basic dimensions as well. Cultures differ along many dimensions, but the one that has attracted the most research attention is individualism versus collectivism. So let's start there. One of the big challenges of life involves managing the tension between looking out for yourself versus looking out for other people. To get by in life, we can't just focus totally on ourselves, but we also can't just focus on other people. There has to be some blend or balance. But there's no clear answer to the question of how you should balance your focus on yourself as an individual with your focus on the other people in your life. Cultures differ in their beliefs about how people should balance this tension between self and other. And those differences are captured by a dimension that has individualism at one end and collectivism at the other end. As the labels indicate, individualist cultures give greater priority to the individual, and collectivist cultures give higher priority to the collective or the group. Individualist cultures are based on the idea that each person's life ultimately belongs to that person, so people have a right to select their own beliefs and values and can live almost any way they please. Collectivist cultures are based on the belief that a person's life belongs mostly to the group or society, so people often have to sacrifice their personal goals and interests for the benefit of the group. The most individualist countries tend to be the most westernized. The United States, Australia, Canada, Great Britain, and the Netherlands top the list of individualist countries. But which are the most collectivist? It's common for people from Western cultures to assume that the most collectivist cultures are countries in East Asia, such as Japan. But in fact, the most collectivist countries are actually places such as Ecuador, Peru, Colombia, and Venezuela. Pakistan is also on that list. Japan actually falls about in the middle of the individualist collectivist continuum, along with countries such as Spain, India, Israel, and Austria. They're the most balanced between individualism and collectivism. Now, this distinction is clearly an overgeneralization. All cultures have individualist and collectivist features, as well as individuals who depart from the cultural norm. But as a whole, cultures differ markedly in the degree to which they are individualist or collectivist. And those differences have implications for the personalities of the people who live or operate within those cultures. For example, individualist cultures encourage people to be themselves, to figure out what they personally want in life, and to pursue it. So people who grow up in individualist cultures are, well, they're more individualistic. They're more focused on their own goals and desires. In an individualist culture, people are encouraged to do things that make them stand out, to be better than other people, to get noticed. But in collectivist cultures, the emphasis is on fitting in and not drawing too much attention to yourself. Why? Because standing out and outperforming other people isn't good for harmony within the group. It's not about you. It's about the collective. In individualist cultures, people are allowed or even encouraged to speak their minds and give their opinions, even if they disagree with other people. But in collectivist cultures, disagreement and conflict are avoided when possible because they interfere with group harmony. In conflict situations, collectivists are primarily concerned with maintaining their relationships with other people, so they prefer to resolve conflicts in ways that protect relationships. Individualists, on the other hand, are more concerned with being right and achieving justice, and they're sometimes willing to sacrifice relationships as long as justice is served. So these two cultural approaches differ in the emphasis they place on asserting one's own views and protecting relationships. Furthermore, in individualist societies, the connections between individuals are looser than they are in collectivist societies. Everybody is expected to look after themselves and their immediate family, but whether you worry much about your extended family or neighbors or strangers is up to you. But in collectivist societies, people tend to be integrated into strong, cohesive groups, which often include extended families, clans, and even entire villages. Although collectivist cultures might sound less selfish, less conflict-ridden, and more peaceful than individualist cultures, keep in mind that collectivist norms that encourage getting along with other people are reserved primarily for members of one's own group, however that's defined. So in collectivist cultures, we're all supposed to get along with others in our group. But it's not uncommon to have conflicts and fights and even wars with people outside our group. The individualism or collectivism of the culture can affect personality. For example, individualist cultures encourage behaviors that are more extroverted, in the sense of being assertive and dominant, and attracting attention to oneself, whereas collectivist cultures encourage a less extroverted and more introverted style. People raised in individualist cultures also tend to be higher in openness than people from collectivist cultures, possibly because collectivist cultures encourage people to adopt the norms of their groups, and they don't allow as much individual freedom in choosing what to believe and how to behave. One interesting implication of individualism's emphasis on focusing on oneself and one's own goals is that people from individualist cultures are not as good at taking other people's perspectives as people from collectivist cultures are. It's not that individualists can't do it. They just don't take other people's perspectives as automatically or as quickly as people from collectivist cultures do. We talked about the relationship between values and personality previously. But I want to say a few more things about values here, because values are one route by which cultures influence people's personalities. For example, a culture that values toughness and aggression will presumably have a higher proportion of tough, aggressive people than a culture that values being gentle and kind. In helping people to prioritize what's important, a culture's values change how people tend to behave. Given the large number and diversity of values around the world, researchers have looked for broad themes in the values that cultures promote. A leader in this area has been Geert Hofstede, who has studied the basic dimensions of cultural values across more than 50 countries. His research identifies four basic dimensions of values on which cultures differ, and thus dimensions that might affect the personalities of the people in a given culture. There are others, but let's focus on these four. Not surprisingly, one of the values that Hofstede identified is the value placed on individualism versus collectivism, but we've already talked about that. A second value that he identified is called power distance, which refers to the degree to which people should recognize and accept an uneven distribution of power among people. At one end of this value dimension are cultures that are very hierarchical, cultures in which people generally relate to one another in terms of their relative status and power, and in which everyone accepts where they are in the hierarchy and accepts the hierarchical status quo. Middle Eastern countries are particularly high in power distance, as are countries with a caste system, such as India. At the other end of the power distance dimension are cultures in which people generally interact with one another as equals, and hierarchies are used only when necessary, such as in the military. Countries with the lowest power distance include New Zealand, Austria, Israel, Ireland, and the Scandinavian countries. The United States is also relatively low in power distance, in the bottom quarter of all countries, but it's not as low as you might expect for a country founded on the idea that all people are created equal. Well, what difference might the degree to which a culture values power distance make for personality? Consider the fact that in most status hierarchies, there are more people toward the bottom of the hierarchy than there are at the top. As a result, most people in high power distance cultures have low status and power. So we might expect to find that most people in a high power distance culture would be socialized to be subservient, to follow the rules, stay in their place, and not rock the boat. And that's what research shows. People from cultures that are high in power distance also tend to score higher in conscientiousness. They follow the rules and do what they're supposed to do. That is, they do what people higher up the hierarchy tell them to. They're also lower in extroversion, so they're less dominant and assertive. And they're lower in openness. They're less likely to entertain new ways of thinking and doing things. That would go against the status quo. So living in a hierarchical culture in which authority and status are valued is associated with being less assertive, more conforming, and more dutiful. A third dimension of cultural values is usually called masculinity-femininity. But I don't like that label because masculinity and femininity connote all sorts of things that don't have anything to do with this dimension. Let me describe it, and we'll come up with a better label. At the high end of this dimension, the so-called masculine end, are cultures that emphasize ambition, achievement, success, competition, and acquiring wealth. At the low end of this dimension, the so-called feminine dimension, are cultures that emphasize caring, cooperation, nurturance, and valuing the quality of life. A better name for this dimension might be agentic versus communal orientation. Cultures that value an agentic orientation stress getting things done, succeeding, and focusing on oneself, including focusing on making money. Cultures that value a communal orientation emphasize helping other people and fostering good relationships. Most industrialized countries, including the United States, lean toward the agentic, achievement-oriented side of this dimension. After all, becoming an industrialized country requires people to generally value achievement and success and making money. Japan scores highest in terms of valuing this agentic orientation. The four countries that emphasize the communal, supportive orientation, the most in the entire world, by far, are the Scandinavian countries. Finland, Sweden, Norway, and Denmark. Costa Rica and Portugal are also relatively communal, along with some countries in Central Africa. For me, one of the most interesting findings is that people in agentic, achievement-oriented, so-called masculine cultures score higher in neuroticism than people in cultures that value a communal orientation. And it's a fairly good-sized correlation. People in agentic cultures are notably more likely to be unhappy, distressed, angry, upset, and stressed out than those in communal cultures. I suppose this is consistent with research showing that those four communal Scandinavian countries are always among the top 10 happiest countries in the world. People in agentic cultures also score higher in openness. It's not completely clear why. But it might be that people who value achievement and success have to be willing to be open and flexible in their beliefs and behaviors to succeed. Success requires novelty and innovation, which are valued more by people high in openness. Hofstede's fourth dimension of cultural values involves uncertainty avoidance. That's a strange label, I know, but it refers to the degree to which a culture leads its members to feel either uncomfortable or comfortable in unstructured and ambiguous situations. Cultures that are high in uncertainty avoidance don't like situations that are novel or unstructured or surprising or different than usual. So such cultures minimize uncertainty by having stricter rules and laws and regulations that specify how things should be done and how people ought to behave. They also emphasize safety and security. Cultures that are high in uncertainty avoidance don't like innovation and change, and they can feel repressive compared to cultures that are low in uncertainty avoidance. Cultures that are low in uncertainty avoidance, we can think of them as uncertainty-accepting cultures, are more tolerant of different beliefs and opinions, including being comfortable with a variety of religions. They try to have as few rules as possible and allow people the freedom to live as they wish. In general, uncertainty avoidance is higher in Latin countries, in Japan, and in Germany, and it's lower in Scandinavia, English-speaking countries such as the United States, England, Ireland, and Australia, and in Jamaica, China, Hong Kong, and Singapore. Think about the ways in which uncertainty-avoiding and uncertainty-accepting cultures might influence the personalities of the people in those cultures. The biggest effect, which was found in a study of 33 countries, is that people in cultures that value accepting uncertainty score significantly lower in neuroticism, which makes sense. Normally, uncertainty and novelty and change worry people. But if your culture values those things and says that uncertainty is not really a problem, you'll probably be more accepting of it all. Greater acceptance of uncertainty is also associated with higher agreeableness. When a culture promotes a live and let live philosophy, people are nicer to each other. We can interpret these relationships between cultural values and personality in two ways. On one hand, we could conclude that growing up in cultures that value particular orientations leads people to develop certain personalities. If my culture values individualism or power distance or communal traits or accepting uncertainty, I'm more likely to develop a personality that's consistent with those values. But some researchers have suggested that the direction of causality might go the other way. Perhaps people in different cultures have different genetic predispositions that influence their personalities. And over time, people with different kinds of personalities create different kinds of cultures. For example, over many generations, a population that is genetically predisposed to be less extroverted, less open, and more conscientious may develop a culture that's high in power distance, in which hierarchy and authority are important. Separating these two causal directions between cultural values and personality is difficult, but studies of immigrants can help. Consider a study that compared these three groups: people whose parents immigrated from China to Canada before they were born, so that the people were raised solely in a Western culture; people who immigrated from China to Canada many years ago, and so have had a fairly long time to adapt to Canadian culture; and people who immigrated from China to Canada quite recently, and so have had little time to adapt. If culture affects personality, we should find that the three groups' personalities differ, because they spent different lengths of time immersed in Canadian culture. But if culture plays little or no role in personality, the three groups should not differ much. The results of the study showed that the three groups did differ. The people who were born in Canada of Chinese parents and thus lived in Canada their whole lives had the most westernized profile of personality traits. And the most recent immigrants to Canada had the least westernized profile, with the long-term immigrants falling in between. So people who were born in Canada were more extroverted, open, and agreeable than those who immigrated later, even though they all had Chinese parents. Such a pattern supports the idea that culture influences personality, but another interpretation is possible. What if people in these three groups started out with different genetic predispositions? Many years ago, immigration from China to Canada was much less common than it is today. So people who took that leap may have been more extroverted and open and less neurotic than average. But those who immigrated more recently, now that it's fairly common, may not need to be as extroverted, open, and emotionally secure to decide to move to another country. Perhaps immigrants who came to Canada many years ago were genetically predisposed to have more Western personalities even before they got here, whereas people who immigrated more recently had no such predisposition. Although that's certainly possible, research shows that immigrants to a new country change in the direction of the prototypical personality for that country the more acculturated they become, which shows that the culture itself has an effect on their personality. For example, one study showed that the more that Japanese immigrants to the United States became involved in American culture through friendships with Americans, the amount of time they spoke English, and adopting American lifestyles, the more their personalities changed away from a typical Japanese profile and toward a typical European-American profile. The more they became immersed in American culture, the more American they became with respect to openness, neuroticism, and conscientiousness. In any case, you can see why it's hard for researchers to answer the chicken and the egg question when it comes to cultural values and personality. While I'm talking about immigrants, let me make another point. Immigrants obviously face many challenges as they adjust to a new culture. But one challenge that isn't discussed much is the mismatch between the immigrant's personality as it developed in his or her home country and the dominant valued personality in the new country. The more that an immigrant's personality matches the normative personality for a new culture, the easier the transition to the new culture should be. But if an immigrant's personality doesn't match how people are supposed to be in the new culture, more stress is likely. Along these lines, researchers looked at the relationship between cultural personality fit and well-being across 28 countries. They found that immigrants whose personality characteristics were more consistent with cultural norms in the new country had greater psychological well-being. Having a personality that's consistent with a culture's values helps people fit in and gives them validation and support from other people, which enhances their well-being. But having a personality that doesn't quite fit the culture creates stress, interferes with a person's social life, and can undermine happiness. Whatever type of culture we're from, we each value certain attributes more than others and have stereotypes about people who have certain psychological characteristics. So when we meet and interact with people from a culture that values different characteristics, misunderstandings can arise. One of the hurdles in getting to know and to get along with people from other places is not just that they may speak different languages or practice different religions or have different traditions. One challenge is that we sometimes have different ways of being a person and interacting with other people. In interacting with people from other cultures, it's helpful to keep in mind that they may value certain personal characteristics differently than you do. In fact, certain characteristics may have quite different connotations in their country than in yours. That means that someone who is behaving in a perfectly acceptable manner for their own country may come across as inappropriate or rude or even disturbed to people from somewhere else. Just being aware of the fact that cultures value and socialize different personality characteristics in their members may help us to be more understanding when interacting with people from different cultural backgrounds.